Chapter 1. Creativity. On a cool fall evening in 2008, four students decided to change an industry. They were all deep in debt, and they had all lost or broken their glasses. They were shocked at how much it would cost to replace them. One of them had been wearing the same pair of broken and repaired glasses for 5 years. He refused to pay for an expensive new pair. Luxottica, the biggest company in the glasses industry, controlled more than 80% of the market. To make glasses cheaper, the four students would need to fight a giant. The four had watched Zappos change the shoe market by selling shoes online, and they wondered if they could do the same with glasses. They discussed the idea with friends, most of whom were very negative. Nobody would buy glasses over the internet, they said. People needed to try them first. Okay, Zappos had done it with shoes, but there were reasons why it wouldn't work with glasses. If this were a good idea, people said, someone would have done it already. None of the students had worked in internet sales or technology, and they knew nothing about glasses or fashion. But they agreed to start a company. They decided to sell glasses that would cost $500 in stores for $95 online. And they would also give another pair of glasses to someone in the poorer countries in the developing world for each pair that they sold. They called their company Warby Parker. The most important part of the business would be its website, and their Warby Parker website was ready in February 2010. They expected to sell one or two pairs of glasses a day, but in less than 1 month, they had 20,000 customers on a waiting list. In 2015, the magazine Fast Company published its yearly list of the world's most innovative companies. Warby Parker was the first company on that list. In the three previous years, the winners had been Google, Nike, and Apple, companies with over 50,000 employees. Warby Parker had just 500 employees, but in 5 years, the company had given more than 1 million free pairs of glasses to the developing world. The company was making $100 million a year and was worth more than $1 billion. Back in 2009, one of those four students asked me to invest in Warby Parker. I refused. It was the worst financial decision I have ever made. I needed to understand where I went wrong. Conformity and originality. Years ago, psychologists discovered that there are two roads to success: conformity and originality. Conformity means following the crowds down the usual paths. Originality means taking unusual roads and developing new ideas that are accepted only by a few people, but that succeed in the end. Of course, nothing is completely original. Our ideas are affected by the world around us. We all borrow thoughts, sometimes by accident, sometimes not. What I mean here by originality is introducing and advancing an idea that is quite unusual in a particular area and may improve that area. Originality begins with creativity, having an idea that is both new and useful. But it doesn't stop there. Originals are people who can make their new idea really work. The Warby Parker people had the originality to think of selling glasses online, but they became originals by taking action to make those glasses cheap and easy to buy. This book is about how we can all become more original. There's a surprising clue in the web browser that you use to search the internet. The problem with defaults. In a recent research project, Michael Hausman was investigating why some people who worked in customer call centres for big companies stayed in their jobs longer than others. He collected information on 30,000 employees who answered phones for banks, airlines, and cell phone companies. He expected to find that their employment histories would give him an answer. He thought people who had changed jobs often in the past would leave their present jobs more quickly. But that wasn't true. Looking at his research, Hausman noticed that his team had collected information about the internet browser that the employees had used when they applied for their job. He didn't think he would find anything interesting there, but the results were amazing. Employees who used Firefox or Chrome stayed in their jobs 15% longer than those who used Internet Explorer or Safari. Hausman thought this was strange, so then he looked at absences from work. Again, Firefox and Chrome users were 19% less likely to miss work than Internet Explorer and Safari users. Then Hausman looked at how employees performed in their jobs. The Firefox and Chrome users had higher sales and their call times were shorter. Their customers were happier too. Hausman knew it wasn't the web browser that made these people good employees. What made the difference was how they had gotten their browsers. If you buy a PC, Internet Explorer is built into Windows. If you buy a Mac, it comes with Safari. But if you choose to use Firefox or Chrome, you are not accepting the default. It's the same at work. The people who didn't accept the default for their browser did their jobs differently. They didn't always accept the usual answers, and they helped their customers with new ideas. Accepting the default is easy, but it doesn't ask us to look at new ways of doing things. Before the four people behind Warby Parker started to think about their company, they knew glasses were expensive, but that had always been true. That was the default. Everybody thought there was a good reason why glasses were expensive. After all, these are health products. A doctor is selling them. Then, Dave Gilboa, one of the four, was buying an Apple iPhone. Why was this phone, a piece of modern technology, cheaper than a simple pair of glasses? Warby Parker decided to look at the glasses industry more closely. One company, Luxottica, was the biggest in the market. Simply, Luxottica could charge what it wanted, 20 times the cost of the glasses. And this meant that a different company could do things very differently. Accepting defaults. We begin to accept defaults when we are very young. When researchers interviewed school teachers, they asked them to list their favourite and least favourite students. They then asked the teachers which students had the most creativity, and these were often the least favourite students. Teachers found that the creative students often made trouble, while most children learned to do what the teacher wanted. You might think it is the most intelligent children who change the world when they become adults, but that doesn't often happen. They may become excellent doctors, but they don't ask why some people cannot afford healthcare. They may become lawyers who defend people against unfair laws, but they don't question the laws themselves. They may become teachers who teach exciting lessons, but without asking what their students really need to learn. The problem for many intelligent children is that we expect them to achieve. It becomes so important for them to achieve that they start to fear failure, which can hold back creativity. Fear of failure held back some of the most original people in history. People who, instead of pushing ahead with confidence, held themselves back through fear of failure. They only took action because other people persuaded them to do so. The men who signed the American Declaration of Independence were not natural revolutionaries. George Washington just wanted to go back to his farm and only became involved because John Adams asked him to command the army. "I have used everything in my power to avoid it," Washington wrote in a letter to his wife, Martha, in 1766. 200 years later, Martin Luther King Jr. wanted to work in the church and as a teacher. But when Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat on a bus to a white man, some people in Montgomery, Alabama, decided to organize a group to support her. At a meeting, someone suggested King as president of the group. King didn't have time to think, and he accepted. He said afterward that if he had had time to think, he would probably have refused. When the church asked Michelangelo to paint the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel in Rome, he wasn't interested. He didn't want to take on such a huge job and ran away to Florence. But he was asked again and again, and after 2 years, he agreed to start work. Nearly 500 years later, in 1977, an investor offered Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak $250,000 to help them start Apple. But the investor demanded that Wozniak leave his job at Hewlett-Packard. Wozniak was afraid to leave his job, and he only agreed when he was encouraged by Steve Jobs, other friends, and his parents. We can only wonder how many Kings, Michelangelos, and Wozniaks had original ideas but were never pushed to develop them. Many of us have ideas to improve our workplaces or schools, but we don't give voice to them. Originality can get you into trouble, and most of us prefer to conform. What are the habits of people who are original and who take action to develop their original ideas? How to be an entrepreneur. To be an original, you need to take big risks. That's what most people think. We admire astronauts like Neil Armstrong and Sally Ride, who left the only planet we know and went bravely into space. We admire leaders like Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr., who risked their lives for the things they believed in. And we admire entrepreneurs like Steve Jobs and Bill Gates, who dropped out of school and worked in dark garages to develop the products of the future. The word entrepreneur was created by Richard Cantillon, and it means someone who takes risks. When we read about the rise of Warby Parker, we see the four friends who started the company as great risk takers. But is it true? 6 months before Warby Parker started business, Neil Blumenthal, one of the four friends, was one of my students. He came to see me because he wanted me to invest in their company. I told him that it was an interesting idea, but I wasn't sure that people would buy glasses online. As it would be difficult to persuade people to buy online, I felt it would need an enormous amount of work to get the company going. And when I discovered what Neil and his friends were planning to do with their own lives, I was even less sure. The first problem was that Neil and his friends were still in school. If they believed in Warby Parker, they should all drop out and work full-time on Warby Parker. No, said Neil. We're not sure it's a good idea, and we don't know if we will succeed. We're working on it in our spare time. However, they were all finishing school at the end of the year. So, after that, they could work full-time on the project? No, said Neil. If things don't work out, I'm taking a full-time job after I finish school, and so are the others. That was enough for me. I decided not to invest. The Warby Parker friends did not fit my picture of successful entrepreneurs. They weren't prepared to risk everything on one idea. I thought they were going to fail because they didn't want any risk. But in fact, that is why they succeeded. In an interesting piece of research, Joseph Raffi and Ji Feng studied 5,000 entrepreneurs over 14 years. They wanted the answer to one simple question. When people start a business, is it better for them to leave their present job or to stay employed? If you think like most people, you would expect the risk-takers who leave their jobs to be more successful. But the opposite happens. Entrepreneurs who keep their original jobs are 33% less likely to fail than the risk-takers who leave their jobs. If you don't like to take risks and have some doubts about your business, you will build your business more carefully. If you take risks in your life, then you may take risks with your business too. Like Warby Parker, many successful businesses were started by people who did not give up their jobs, at least at the beginning. After inventing the first Apple I computer, Steve Wozniak started Apple with Steve Jobs in 1976, but continued to work for Hewlett-Packard until 1977. Larry Page and Sergey Brin developed a better way to search the internet in 1996, but didn't stop work on their higher degrees at Stanford University until 1998. They tried to sell Google for less than $2 million in 1997 because their new company was making it difficult to study. Luckily, nobody made an offer. Brian May was doing a higher degree in physics when he started to play guitar in a new band. He continued to study for several years before he started to play full-time for Queen. Stephen King worked in a gas station and as a teacher for 7 years after writing his first story. He finally gave up work a year after his first novel, Carrie, was published. These people were all balancing their risk, taking a big risk in one part of their lives, but playing safe with another. Keeping things safe meant that there was space to be original. And because the entrepreneurs were not taking such a big financial risk, there was more time available. There was less danger of starting the business with a poor quality product in an effort to get the money back quickly. As Malcolm Gladwell wrote in The New Yorker, many entrepreneurs take plenty of risks, but those are generally the failed entrepreneurs, not the success stories. From idea to action. Having revealed that successful originals often begin by questioning defaults and balancing risk, the rest of this book is about moving from original ideas to action. I have spent more than 10 years researching originality and studying some of the most successful originals of our time. I want to share with you how we can all be more original without taking too many risks with our personal, financial, and professional lives. I hope that what I have discovered will help people develop their originality and will help leaders develop originality in their organizations. The first part of this book looks at how to manage the risks in developing, recognizing, and pushing forward original ideas. New ideas are risky, and we need to learn how to recognize good ideas and avoid the bad ones. Once you are sure that you have a good idea, the next step is to get other people to understand it. You'll discover how the most popular television show ever nearly didn't get made, and why an entrepreneur told investors the reasons why they shouldn't invest in his company. The second part of this book looks at the choices we need to make when developing original ideas. There are the risks of being first to the market. It's sometimes riskier to move early than it is to be late. Delaying can help entrepreneurs build businesses that are stronger over time, and it can help originals remain creative. I will also look at building coalitions of people to work together, and how, sometimes, it can be useful to work with your enemies. The third part of this book looks at how to develop originality in children, and explains how our family and others make us more or less likely to question defaults. You'll see how whether or not baseball players are the first child in a family affects the risks that they take. I'll also look at how leaders can encourage the development of creative ideas in their companies. To finish, I'll look at what stops us from developing our originality. The originals are the people who push us all forward. On the inside, they are not that different from the rest of us. They have the same fears and doubts. What makes them different is that they try even though they have fears and doubts. They know failure is a smaller disappointment than failing to try.